The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
First of all, it's sort of like the Super Bowl of fundraisers. I mean, to have $25 million raised.
Mr. Clinton, Mr. Obama, and the president celebrating what the campaign says is a record $25 million or plus million dollar haul. It's also expected to be just the beginning of President Biden's predecessors campaigning on his behalf.
You know, that huge fundraising haul of $26 million last night here in New York.
Yeah, so there's no way to put a damper on what the president was able to accomplish yesterday. What you saw was a party unified.
Just hearing about what President Obama did last night, it does remind me how great he is at this night. When Obama's telling left-wing protesters, hey, you know, we got to learn to talk to each other, it resonates.
Barack Obama is very, very good at telling you you're full of it in a way that's if not charming, then something close to it.
Really, it was electric in that room. There were more than 5,000 people in Radio City Music Hall, so a lot of bodies, a lot of energy, a lot of excitement, especially to see, I think, the former presidents and, of course, President Biden. So it was a very rock star moment, and it was a rock star night for the Democrats and for President Biden.
I mean, $26 million, Jeff, such a staggering sum for one night.
To see how President Obama responded. He was giving a response about Gaza and was interrupted and said, look, you have to listen, not just talk. And that was a moment that really resonated with the crowd. He was kind of sharp in a way that we haven't seen Biden be sharper. But Obama and Clinton laid out reasons for the people who have maybe moved away from Biden to come back. We'll continue to do that. And President Obama also made an interesting statement about saying there can't be a purity test. Mm. And he spoke about that from his perspective of having been in the White House.
What a night. What an event. And $26 million is just a staggering amount of money to have raised in one evening. It's just boggles the mind. It gives a sense of the Biden campaign as something of a juggernaut while Donald Trump worries about his court cases and cheats to win his own golf tournament.
The swooning media, they're very excited about all the money that Barack Obama and Bill Clinton, they brought him in out of retirement, and of course the fake president, they're all getting together at the Radio City Music Hall last night in New York City. And what we need to consider, all kidding aside, my father brings this point out in the very first few pages of America Under Attack. There's a dangerous spirit at work here. That's how he sets up the entire book. I mean, these people, they're not reporters, they're propagandists. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We appreciate you joining us on today's show. Hard to believe it's the last show of the week. You can get to the live video stream of this show every weekday morning at 11:05 a.m. in the Central Time Zone of the United States. That's at trumpetdaily.com or at rumble.com/trumpetdaily. We appreciate you joining us, as I said a moment ago. So much to get to today. Besides the swooning, we'll start with that, but also the contrast in the same day, the same city, New York City, Donald Trump. He goes up to pay his tributes to Jonathan Diller, his funeral, the police officer that was senselessly murdered by a guy that had been arrested 22 times. So you have Trump at the funeral speaking to the grieving mother with her little infant, the grieving widow with her little infant. And then you've got the star-studded bash at Radio City Music Hall just across town. Not just the three former presidents, Democrat presidents, but all of these celebrities. $100,000 a pop just to take a picture with the three former presidents. All of the elites. And then the swooning media, as you saw there, just celebrating this event. This is from that Read First section of America Under Attack. As I say, the first few pages, my father says here, in his book, Panic 2012, the sublime and terrifying inside story of Obama's final campaign, author Michael Hastings described the captivating effect Barack Obama had on the journalists covering him during his second presidential campaign. Hastings told MSNBC that's the presence of Obama, even on the press corps, even on the people who follow him. When they're near him, they lose their minds sometimes. That's what you saw in the cold open. People that have lost their minds, people that are mentally deranged. Seriously, they're mentally ill. As they get together, they all say the same thing, and they're so happy. And they say all that Trump's doing is trying to score political points by going to this funeral. These are the same people that went on and on about Brian Sicknick, who was not killed on January 6th. He died of a stroke the day after. But over and again, Scarborough and company told us that he was murdered. They bashed his head with a fire, with the fire extinguisher. That's a storyline that played out for weeks and weeks and weeks until it was thoroughly debunked. And they still talk about it. In some respects, they still do. They talk about six, seven, how many police officers died in January 6th? And they tell us this all the time. For what? To score political points. To go after the enemy, the January 6th protesters. Meanwhile, Trump goes to the funeral. I mean, here's Donald Trump acting like an official president. And these others, just the celebrity bash at Radio City Music Hall. My father says here, because the journalists swooned, because they avoided asking difficult questions, because they made a hero out of Barack Obama, this man took the highest office in the land twice. Well, you could say a third time now. And he's desperate to get a fourth term, to preserve his legacy, to continue the fundamental transformation. Says here, what you need to see is that a dangerous spirit is at work here. There's a powerful spiritual force behind such inexplicable behavior. How do you even explain it? You know, deep in their heart of hearts, they know. They know. I'm talking about the swooning media, the regime media. They know the optics are bad for the fake president. When you just lay it alongside what Donald Trump was doing yesterday, they know. They know that with ordinary Americans, this looks pretty bad. You've got all the rich fat cats over here, and that you've got Donald Trump over here. Not that he isn't rich, but you see what he's doing. He's a man of the people. All of these law enforcement officials gathered together in support of Trump, mourning the death of Jonathan Diller. Listen again to, this is some from Joe Scarborough and also Eugene Robinson as they swoon and talk about how great it is to have the dear leader back in action. And this early in the political campaign season as well. Clip three.
Barack Obama, the service he is doing by going into Joe Biden, having those direct, those blunt one-on-one conversations with Joe Biden. That's what a president needs. And a president getting that from another president is so vitally important. Barack Obama going out, being engaged early, because, you know, usually he comes in the last week of a campaign, he'll speak and you go, where's he been? He's so good. Where's he been? Well, he's here now.
People do want to hear from Barack Obama. They want to see him. They want to see Michelle Obama. The Obamas occupy a sort of special niche in this society. They have history. They made history. They have glamour, they have charisma, and they have this ability to communicate with people and to make people want to listen.
And so we have yet another event for them to pull out this tired narrative. The fact that, hey, they're unbeatable. They're a juggernaut. And Donald Trump, well, he's finished. He's finished. Listen to Willie Geist as he talks about the different ground games for these two camps. Clip four.
Yeah, and contrast the ground game you and Gene are talking about here that the Biden campaign has already been working on with what Donald Trump is or is not doing. As Donnie pointed out, he's comfortable. He believes he can win the presidency from Mar-a-Lago, that he can do an occasional rally. Yeah, he's going to go to a couple states here and there, but make speeches, grievance speeches outside of courtrooms and win the presidency that way. But we heard even this week of Pete Hoekstra, who is the former congressman in Michigan, who's now the chair of the Michigan Republican Party, recently ascended to that position, saying, hey, guys, are we going to open an office here in Michigan? This is kind of an important state. So you're starting to hear even from some Republicans grumbling that the Trump campaign isn't really a campaign and that they're going to need every vote, of course, in states like that.
The Trump campaign isn't really a campaign. I'm going to get to the numbers. Even the wealthy donors that are lining up in support of Donald Trump and the media that's coming around after all these years, the New York Post, Fox News. I mean, the New York Post headline today, it gives you the contrast in living color. So he has no ground game. And then Lawrence O'Donnell, for his part, talks about how the takeaway from yesterday is that the Democrats are all united. There is some truth to that. But then he says, but the Republicans, how could Donald Trump ever get a former Republican president to come out and support him? Where's George Bush? He can't even get Vice President Pence, his own VP. Well, that says a lot about what Americans, what Trump supporters think about the whole establishment, Democrat and Republican alike. This is from Lawrence O'Donnell, clip 5.
Well, the presidential campaign came to New York City tonight. In fact, it's across the street from here at Radio City Music Hall, where the single biggest fundraiser of the presidential campaign took place tonight with three presidents on stage, Biden, Obama, and Clinton. The event shows the unity of the Democratic Party, not just the Democratic Party today, but the Democratic Party of the last 30 years as it was led by President Bill Clinton, then President Barack Obama, and now President Joe Biden. A similar gathering on the Republican side of the presidential campaign is impossible because the Republican Party is not unified. The Republican Party has been shattered by Donald Trump.
You know, actually, I need to dial back what I said just a moment ago, how unified the Democrat Party is. What these talking heads, what the regime media did not report is that there was a large pro-Hamas, anti-Joe Obama protest just outside Radio City Music Hall, and even protesters that were able to get into this event that the swooning media just is raving about. See some of the protesting and look at the numbers. There were 5,000 people inside Radio City Music Hall. And then look, I don't know what the estimated count is outside, but look at clip 2.
There was an insurrection.
Shame on you, Joe Biden! Shame on you! Shame on you! You are funding genocide in Palestine, and no amount of Vulcan strength that you will change.
That's Joe Obama losing its base. It's hardcore Democrat base. That's Joe Obama losing Dearborn. And you can be sure they're panicking behind closed doors because they're losing the minority vote. Trump's been able to peel away African-Americans, Latinos. And now, I mean, I'm not sure if Dearborn's going to go and vote for Trump, but they're not going to vote for Biden. So what does that mean for the Biden campaign? So they've got a lot of money. Do they have the support? Do they, more than that, do they have the policies that Americans can rally behind? All of that money, $26 million, and horrible optics because you lay it right alongside what Donald Trump was. And Donald Trump, even if he didn't have the money, he's having no trouble getting the publicity. Everybody sees it. The news media, at least on the conservative side, they're reporting on it now. The New York Post did this morning. What a fascinating, just looking at it politically. The comeback kid, I mean, this is, as some have written, the greatest political comeback in history. They laughed at him. Scarborough laughed. I'll get to this, and I'm getting ahead of myself, but Scarborough and company laughed when Donald Trump announced his candidacy, and the New York Post put it at the very bottom of the front page and said, yeah, you can read about it. The Florida man, they called him. They didn't even say Donald Trump says he's going to run for another presidency. They called him the Florida man. They put it in a banner at the very bottom. They said you can read about it on page 19 or 20. And Scarborough and company just laughed. He's finished. He's going to try to make a comeback. It'll never happen. How many times do they write him off? So, Lawrence O'Donnell, Democrats are united, Republicans are bitterly divided, and this is bad news for Trump. He's finished. Play clip six.
Donald Trump's own vice president, Mike Pence, has announced that he does not support Donald Trump for president. Now, just imagine the political equivalent in the Democratic Party. Just imagine if Joe Biden's former running mate, Barack Obama, was opposing Joe Biden's reelection. It is inconceivable because the Democratic Party is fundamentally sane and the Republican Party has been lost to Trumpian madness to the point that Mike Pence refusing to endorse Donald Trump is now considered perfectly normal in Trump world.
So you've got the swooning on the one hand, as I've said, and then you've got the wishful thinking on the other hand. They wish that Donald Trump was deranged. They wish that he didn't have popular support. They wish that everything was completely divided on the Republican side. In fact, so many of those Republicans that have come out against Donald Trump, they're not Republicans. They're supporters of Joe Obama. They're swooners. And they're going after all of these, the party of the people. That's what they sell themselves as, the Democrats. Here they are going after millions of dollars from celebrities or dark money. They'll get it from anywhere they can. And as long as they get more money, then the regime media is there to tell you that Trump is finished. As if Trump doesn't have money. look at his DJT stock, by the way. This is a montage, a short one, on the Democrat Party becoming really the party of dark money, clip 11.
Democrats have had more money than Republicans going back really to 2016. Democrats have become the party of big money donors. They've become the party of dark money. So I think all Republican strategists have been anticipating the Democrats are going to have all the money you can see and the money that you can't see or can't track. But at some point, the voters know both of these people. They also know how they feel about the results of both presidencies. And if you look at the polling right now, there's a lot of nostalgia for the presidency of Donald Trump when people are asked to compare it to the results they're getting from Joe Biden.
You know, it's a huge problem for them. Ari's right that the Republicans are facing a really daunting task here because they are going to get out fundraised. They are going to see the big money going to the Democrats, and the fact that, you know, Bill Clinton and Barack Obama are linking arms to save Joe and potentially save, you know, Obama's legacy with him, you know, is something of significance. I do think it's kind of desperate for them to be turning to Stephen Colbert and Mindy Kaling.
It is revealing, and I'll get to that in a second. It does show desperation because it wasn't just the Dear Leader and Bill Clinton. It was Stephen Colbert. It was a star on The Office. It was, forget all the singers' names, but just a celebrity bash. And you know what? You won't get any reporting on this, but the Radio City Music Hall sits 6,000 people. Just over 6,000. And you heard in the cold open the guy that said, yeah, they drew 5,000 people. 5,000 people? There were other reports saying it was a sellout. So either they sold it out and 1,000 decided not to show up, or they're playing with the numbers as they often do. Okay, the 26 million came in from a bunch of rich people. Is that difficult? But what about the popular support? The three former... President Trump on his own can go to somewhere like Iowa and draw 15,000 people, no problem. They're in New York City. They're in deep, dark blue New York City. And I'm not even sure they filled up Radio City Music Hall, even with all the celebrities added in. That spells... That spells trouble for the Democrats. You're not going to get this coming from the regime media. Greg Gutfeld over at Fox News, I think he made a pretty important point when he talked about how that for the Democrats, it really does reveal that it's all coming down to money. They're out there bragging about the Super Bowl of fundraisers. They're pulling in $26 million. Meanwhile, Trump is broke. Remember that? Remember that storyline from 2 seconds ago? Trump has no money. Trump can't raise funds. Trump doubled his net worth just Monday of this week. Just 5 days ago. He's a billionaire many times over. Listen to Gutfeld's point, clip 14.
I don't think you've ever seen a more perfect example of the sparkling, obscenely aloof elites in one spot in your life. These people are so far removed from the price of things in the supermarket or what it's like to ride a subway. They're a collection of overrated elites who have actually done really well dividing this country as they jet from Davos to Aspen and Aspen to Davos. So you see, and Jessica's laid out it in a stark contrast. It's, as she said, look at the money. So you see the game here. It's about them raising money while draining Trump of all his money and then boasting about it. See, he's got to pay for his lawyers. See how it's working? And you know, they're not going to elect a felon. That was the strategy. It's not about policies or people. It's about a financial advantage and winning at any way possible.
He makes a good point. This is why they're trying to destroy Donald Trump's financial empire. This is why they're trying to run him out of New York and all of his business together with him. This is why they were so giddy and excited about the fact that he was going to have to pay a half billion dollar bond. It's all about the money. If they raise more money, they've got it. It's in the bag. And if we can just if we can wipe out Trump's fortune, we've got to make sure that all of his money's tied up so that he can't spend money. This is from Off the Press. It says here, President Biden headline. Well, it talks about the Radio City Music Hall event, $25, $26 million. It's an eye-popping figure. But then it goes on and quotes what one Republican donor has to say. Point Bridge Capital founder Hal Lambert told Your World a factor in the hall was the guest list. Speaking of, again, the Democrat donors and the figures who were appearing alongside Biden. For instance, a group photo with Biden, former President Clinton, and former President Obama would reportedly set an attendee back $100,000 just to get a picture with those guys. $100,000. Talk about mental illness. That's what you'd have to do that. To give up $100K? It says here, CBS host Stephen Colbert was scheduled to moderate a discussion among the presidents while the Office star, Mindy Kaling, had been named host of the event. DreamWorks Pictures co-founder and ex-Disney executive Jeffrey Katzenberg helped organize the event, Variety reported, while also listing Queen Latifah, Lizzo, and British songstress Cynthia Erivo among the attendees. This was like a celebrity event. It was like a concert with the star celebrities leading the way. Having the celebrities there and having former presidents there says a lot about Biden's effort to be able to raise money on his own, Lambert said. He's right. What if the event was just Joe Biden speaking at Radio City Music Hall? You know, just like Trump does at any of his events. It's just Trump. I mean, he'll have some of his assistants or supporters, Ramaswamy or maybe the senator from the state he's having the rally in, come up and speak. But for the most part, no celebrities. It's just Trump. I don't think he would come close to that number of 25 million had he not had all the celebrities and not the former presidents there. That's a fact. That's not a guess. If Joe Biden shows up on his own, he's going to have like 11 people standing in hula hoops. He can't get an audience that size. So you see what they have to do. They have to fake their way through everything. And then they get the figure, 26 million. And then the regime media does its job. And there you go. Trump is finished. There's another article. I won't take the time to go through it. It's from the Washington Times. But it talks about It's not like these Democrat elites are the only ones that have rich friends, but Trump's got a few rich friends as well. He's got an event, I think, next week at Mar-a-Lago. And if it's anywhere near 25 or 30, maybe 30 million in donations, do you think the morning meltdown is going to come out the next day and celebrate the fact that, well, hey, Trump did it too? Of course not. They'll ignore it. They'll ignore it and continue to pretend that Trump is broke and Biden is just killing it. Yeah. Think about all of the campaign ads he's going to be able to buy. That's Lawrence O'Donnell. Play clip 7.
The unique ability of the Democratic Party to put three presidents on stage together in Radio City Music Hall, the largest indoor theater in the world, with seats for 6,013 people, means that the sold-out event that the Democratic Party ran tonight means that the Biden-Harris campaign have the most powerful fundraising operation in the history of American politics. That sold-out event raised more than $25 million, which is more than the Trump campaign raised in the entire month of February. That's right. The Biden-Harris campaign in 2 hours tonight raised more money than the Trump campaign raised for an entire month. And that means that in August, September, and October, when the battleground states are flooded with television commercials for the campaigns, the Biden-Harris campaign will have a tremendous advantage. Those television advertising campaigns are aimed at undecided voters and swing voters, voters who could go either way on election day.
Yeah, Trump's not going to have any money to pay for television ads. He's not getting any publicity, Donald Trump. You have the contrast. Just look, okay, last night they raked it in, 26 million. And on the same day, as I said earlier, Donald Trump visits this poor widow who lost her law enforcement official husband in a senseless murder carried out by a thug that had been arrested. He had a rap sheet that just went on and on, arrested 22 times. And yet listen to the regime media as they try to dismiss this visit to this man's funeral, all the law enforcement surrounding it. They try to dismiss this as, well, just an attempt to get a few votes. Listen to clip 8.
And this is what happened, is such a sad, sad event, such a horrible thing. And it's happening all too often, and we're just not going to let it happen. The Diller family will, you'll never be the same. You can never be the same. And we have to stop it. We have to stop it. We have to get back to law and order. We have to do a lot of things differently.
One of the things we should mention in terms of what the numbers actually tell, according to the FBI, the major crime in cities across this country is down.
Meanwhile, guys, former President Donald Trump also in New York yesterday to attend the wake of an NYPD officer killed the other day in the line of duty. Trump spoke to reporters outside, describing the officer's death as a horrible thing and calling for a return to law and order.
But of course, because he's Donald Trump, he's making it political. Election. We should note stats show that crime is actually fallen most places in this country over the last couple of years since it's...
I know the facts don't matter to Donald Trump, but crime rates keep dropping. Republicans will keep lying. Other news outlets will keep lying about it. And people whip themselves into a frenzy and say, what about crime? And you can show them the facts. It's just the fact. They may not like it, but it's a fact. And that's how Trump extremists have gotten. And it's how cable news networks run. It's their business model to lie about the facts, to twist and distort reality for viewers day in, day out, night in, night out. Donald Trump is lying when he says crime rates are way up. They're not. They're down. They're lower than they were when he was president.
Yeah, that's just a fact. The fact is they are down. And it's that perception versus reality thing that violent crime in America is down significantly year over year. that is just a fact.
He is talking about crime, even though crime is down in a number of ways.
A crime. Now, if you look at crime statistics nationally, most violent crimes are down. If you look, and so this is one place where there's a disconnect between the crime statistics and the crime perceptions among voters. And again, the statistics tell you crime is in better shape now than it was a few years back. However, some of these crimes are so shocking, Wolf, that they stir people. They stir anxiety, and Trump wants to turn that into votes.
Imagine being Jonathan Diller's widow, and she turns on Morning Meltdown or CNN, and listens to these Orwellian crime statistics as they play with the numbers. Really, their policy is to ignore crime. That's why they know it's down, because they ignore crime, or they fudge with the stats. The guy had been arrested 22 times. I told you about the story yesterday of the guy being let out of jail. The parole officer said, hey, we'll let him out of prison. He goes and stabs his ex-wife and her son. He kills the son. It's happening. And illegal aliens. What about the Michigan woman? Now it's the woman in Michigan murdered by an illegal alien. It's just a fact, they say. No wonder they invited Donald Trump. And no wonder Joe Biden didn't even call the poor woman. She's now a widow. And her husband was a hero, a law enforcement officer in New York. And you listen to these propagandists as they just dismiss it. Crime's down. Well, how about one story on the woman or the officer? None of that. Trump's just out there trying to get votes. Well, look at the contrast. What do you think ordinary people think about the contrast? The celebrity bash that raked in $26 million for the fake president. Or Donald Trump, who got some publicity of his own in a different way, there at the funeral. Listen to one NBC guy who gets it right on the contrast. This is clip 9.
I mean, I think this today actually is a favorable contrast for Donald Trump. I accept the point of having three presidents on the stage with a lot of stars, but for the average voter, they're seeing Donald Trump at a funeral for a slain officer. And I do think, I accept your point that statistics show crime is down in some areas, but for many perceptions for Americans, it's still high. And I think it's a huge advantage for Donald Trump, but the optics of him being there with the family of the slain soldier who was arrested 22 times before killing an officer is a stark contrast to what Joe Biden is doing tonight. And I think that favors Donald Trump significantly.
A little bit of truth sneaks into an NBC broadcast. There you go. It's a stark contrast. The New York Post, give and take. It's got a picture of Trump at the funeral and then the three former presidents with the celebrities. Give and take. Who's giving and who's taking? Just looking at the two events yesterday, which president was out there to give and which one was out there to take? Donald Trump raked in $0. We'll see. I mean, the fact that that's the New York Post, by the way, wasn't that long ago when the New York Post, Fox News, I mean, they had them some hatred for the bad orange man. You just go, you look back at the history, recent history at that, just the last couple of years. This is the Florida man makes an announcement. I already gave you that. Just a banner at the very, and then there's MSNBC making fun of it. Florida man makes, I had to fold it over to be able to see it, said Willie. The New York Post was making fun of it. The Morning Meltdown made fun of it. Donald Trump says he's going to run for office again. Really? He's finished. He is finished. This is from that article, December 28, 2020. Maybe it's a different one. President Trump, it's time to end this dark charade. He was saying we need to look into all of this election fraud. And the New York Post was there lecturing, saying, no, we need to move on. We can't live in the past. We got to go forward. It says, but let's be clear. Those efforts have found nothing. What you and Giuliani and Jenna Ellis have looked into, look, there's nothing there. All those hearings in front of those House, you know, those governments in the state houses and senates came to nothing. There's another headline at the New York Post. Trumpty Dumpty. Just making fun of the bad orange man. This is the same paper. The same Rupert Murdoch's paper. Trumpty Dumpty. says here, here's how Donald Trump sabotaged the Republican midterms. Yeah, he messed it all up. He got behind certain individuals. That was just 2022. Ruined it for the Republicans. They just wish he'd go away. This is from that same piece, 2022. Hey, Lion Ted and Sleepy Joe, meet toxic Trump. He's toxic. Everybody hates him. Everything he touches, it just turns. It turns to dung, basically. Further on, Trump is perhaps the most profound vote repellent in modern American history. That's the New York Post, November 2022. You remember the narrative. Yeah, they didn't win as many seats because of Trump. New York Post was right on board with that. That's just a year and a half ago, right? This is July 2022. Trump's silence on January 6th is damning. Yes, it is. Oh, boy, it sure does. It reveals a lot about Trump. It was incitement by silence, said the New York Post. But as a matter of principle, as a matter of character, Trump has proven himself unworthy to be this country's chief executive again. You want something more recent? This is August 2023. Every Trump indictment brings us closer to the rematch America really doesn't need. Yeah, we don't need Trump to come back in. That's just from a few months ago. New York Post, just a few months ago. And then listen to this one. I mean, this is Trump yesterday drawing a contrast between the events of both days. You see how the New York Post has come around. Who's giving and who's taking here? Then this comment by Trump, you'll notice who's with him. A former never-Trumper from Fox News, clip one.
And I support the police. I would say at the highest level of any president by far, maybe double or triple. And they knew that. That's why when I walked into that funeral parlor, it was like love. It was just, they want to shy away from it. They didn't even call the family. You know, they could have called. You don't have to be a rocket scientist to know. Even a call would be perhaps, I'm not sure they'd take his call.
That's Trump saying, you know, the Biden people, they should have at least called the widow, but they wouldn't do it. He goes into the funeral. He's surrounded by law enforcement in New York City. But look at this picture here. There he is with Brian Kilmeade, a never-Trumper. Rupert Murdoch's news organizations, they're coming around. I mean, that seems like a pretty big development. That seems like this could be good for Trump's campaign. Getting the support now of Fox News and the New York Post. Getting the optics from what happened yesterday. And then the fact that he doubled his net worth just 5 days ago. It's pretty big news. But no. The regime says he's finished. And if the regime says he's finished, then you just have to believe it. If they say it, it's the facts. When we come back, we're going to move right into our World Watch segment for this week. And then a Bible study, a short one, and then maybe some time for emails. We'll see how that it goes. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We'll be right back.
Daily news, Bible prophecy. See the connection on the Trumpet Daily. Are you feeling overwhelmed by the flood of news and information? You need something to sift the news and bring you only what matters most. You need the Trumpet Daily. You also need something to help you understand not just what's happening now, but what will happen next. You need the Trumpet Daily. Only the Trumpet Daily accurately matches daily news to precise Bible prophecies. Because Bible prophecy is the only tool up to the task of sifting the news down to what's important and showing you what will happen next. Join host Stephen Fleury every weekday. Go to TrumpetDaily.com.
Hong Kong's pro-Beijing lawmakers passed a new security law on March 19th that expands the Chinese Communist Party's power. The law allows the CCP to severely punish treason, espionage, and insurrection in Hong Kong with up to life imprisonment. Western leaders, the United Nations, and human rights groups criticized the law strongly, saying it further erodes freedom in this former British colony previously known for its autonomy from Beijing. When the British gave up Hong Kong in 1997, China promised the city would retain its identity and unique freedoms for at least 50 years. At first, Hong Kong responded with hostility and mass protests to laws that increased China's power. But now, China has gutted Hong Kong's legislature, stacking it with individuals loyal to the CCP. This new security law passed in less than 2 months, with overwhelming legislative support. Hong Kong is an important territory with access to the South China Sea, and China seeks to cement its control of the key sea gate. America and Britain used to control all of the major sea lanes in the world, but over the last few decades, control of these vital sea gates has shifted to powers like China with fundamentally different values and beliefs. The trumpet predicted this shift in power based on clear forecasts in Bible prophecy. To learn more, read Hong Kong, The End of Freedom Begins. More than 20 attempted hijackings by Somali pirates have occurred since mid-November, Reuters reported on March 21st. The increase in Somali piracy is worsening the already critical shipping crisis created by the Houthis' Red Sea attacks. From 2008 to 2014, Somali pirates wreaked havoc in important shipping lanes from the Gulf of Aden to the Indian Ocean. When international powers ramped up patrols in the affected waters, the pirates quieted down for nearly 10 years. But now that the world is focused on the Houthis' attacks in the Red Sea, Somalia's pirates are taking advantage of the diversion. A pirate financier told Reuters that the pirates took this chance because the international naval forces that operate off the coast of Somalia reduced their operations. The Bible prophesied the rising tensions in the Red Sea today. These trends will intensify, leading to the deadliest conflict in history. To learn more, read Trumpet Editor-in-Chief Gerald Flurry's article, Is the Red Sea Crisis About to Fulfill Bible Prophecy? Europe should push towards completing its long-postponed Capital Markets Union project, French President Emmanuel Macron said on March 19th. This would allow the European Union to better mobilize private cash needed for investments in European companies, especially those working with artificial intelligence and green energy. In recent months, German Chancellor Olaf Scholz has also called on the EU to complete its creation of the Capital Markets Union, saying it is a key issue for economic growth and job creation in Europe. The Capital Markets Union has been on the table since 2015 without real progress. The aim is to create a single market for capital within Europe, rather than the fragmented market Europe has now. The EU wants to unify and control its investments in one centralized market, which is an important step toward European unification. To learn more about why the trumpet closely watches Europe's path toward economic union, read Europe's Savings, an Engine for Growth. To learn more about current world news and how it relates to Bible prophecy, please visit thetrumpet.com.
That's right, thetrumpet.com, that's our home website, I guess you could say, or the mother website of all the other websites that we monitor and produce. So just go to thetrumpet.com and you can get to so much information, so much free material. You can, of course, call our operators. You can call the 800 number and request hard copies of literature like America Under Attack, but there's a numerous other booklets and articles that we make available at no cost or obligation if you just go to thetrumpet.com. So I want to just tidy up our study in some of the last few programs on the study of courage and of faith and obedience and deliverance using some examples out of the book of Daniel, this book that has so many earth-shaking prophecies in it. But there's also some just outstanding examples of faithful obedience to God and God delivering those who go through trials and tests because they faithfully obey God. I mean, that does bring some persecution upon true Christians from time to time when they're stepping out and obeying God in this present evil world, as Paul said in Galatians 1:4, there's going to be some people here and there that don't like it. The individuals in the Babylonian court there in Daniel 3, they didn't like the three friends of Daniel. and the fact that they obeyed God. They were jealous of the fact that they had won favor from the Babylonian king. And it's the same story in Daniel 6 with the lion's den. Daniel was moving right up to the top of that kingdom because he was so faithful to God. And God blessed him and gave him favor with the king. But then those around the king, they became very, very jealous and envious. And so they set him up. They wanted to entrap Daniel. And I've already gone through that miraculous that miraculous deliverance earlier. So as I say, we'll just finish off with a few verses in Daniel 6 and then switch over to the Gospels. But first, just that point of deliverance. I was telling my wife the other day when we were discussing this study that so many of the stories of the Bible are simply about faithful obedience. You know, a great patriarch or matriarch that steps out and obeys God in faith. And then God, when it looked like there was no hope at all, God intervening and miraculously delivering his people. Look at the Exodus with the people of Israel. There they were in captivity, no way out. And God said, now, okay, now if you do this, 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 and this, I'll intervene and save you. I'll deliver you. I'll protect you. And he did. And then they got out into the wilderness and they still lacked faith. Their faith staggered, or they staggered. They struggled with faithlessness and they wandered for 40 years because of it. Here at the end of Daniel 6, you see how God rewarded Daniel for his faithful obedience. God was Daniel's judge. That's the meaning of his name. God is judge. He's my judge. Not King Nebuchadnezzar, not King Darius. No king, no human being. It's God that I'm trying to please. It's God. It's God who I'm here to obey, to faithfully support. Daniel did that, and notice what happened. Verse 24 of Daniel 6, and the king commanded, and they brought those men which had accused Daniel, and they cast them into the den of lions, them, their children, and their wives, and the lions had the mastery of them and broke all their bones in pieces wherever they came at the bottom of the den. And so Daniel's accusers, they were thrown into the lion's den. In the end, they, along with their families, all of them, and those lions feasted on these persecutors. Daniel, for his part, he was fervently praying to God all through it, this trial. But in the end, I mean, he let God fight the battle. He let God solve the problem. And then look at how the tables turned in the end. Verse 25, then King Darius wrote unto all people, nations, and languages that dwell in all the earth, peace be multiplied unto you. I make a decree that in every dominion of my kingdom, men tremble in fear before the God of Daniel. For he is the living God and steadfast forever, and his kingdom that which shall not be destroyed, and his dominion shall be even unto the end. So like we covered the other day, I mean, the tables just turned completely. Verse 27 says, He delivers and rescues, and he works signs and wonders in heaven and earth. Who has delivered Daniel from the power of the lions? Daniel's God delivers and rescues. That's something that we need to remember, especially at this time of year as we prepare for the spring holy days. Daniel's God delivers. Daniel's God rescues. Daniel's God saves. And we've got to do our part, but we don't want to do God's part and fight our own battles. We want to let God fight our battles. And then just enthusiastically and zealously get behind God's lead and follow him. Be zealous in our following of Jesus Christ, our head, our high priest, our master, our advocate when we sin, as it says in 1 John 2. Verse 28, it says, so this Daniel prospered in the reign of Darius and in the reign of Cyrus the Persian. Daniel was just an ordinary man. He had an extraordinary education, as I covered some few programs ago. He really did apply himself to learning. He understood prophecies by studying the books of the Bible. That's in Daniel 9. You can read all through Daniel 1 and see see everything that you need to know about his royal education. It was a royal education. And the reason he was so educated, the reason he was 10 times better than all the scholars in the kingdom, is because he was so close to God. You read through Psalm 119 and see how that, just studying into the Word of God, the law of God, it puts you farther ahead than your own teachers if you just really apply yourself to that relationship. It's the most important relationship there is, as my father has written, your relationship with God. Switch over now to Luke chapter 18 and verse 8, and we'll just read some of the words of Jesus Christ. It says here, I tell you that he will avenge them speedily. God will take care of us. God will avenge. He did it with Daniel. He did it with Daniel's three friends. The tables turned in the end. I'll take care of you. I'll fight your battles. Don't worry. But it says, nevertheless, when the Son of Man comes, shall he find faith on the earth? When Jesus Christ returns to this earth, is he going to find faith? What does that say about our faithless age? This is from the booklet, What is Faith? Herbert Armstrong wrote this. When Jesus uttered those words, speaking of what I just read to you in Luke 18, he was looking into the future, into our very present generation, which he clearly foresaw, and foreseeing the almost total absence of faith in our time, he asked this question. Certainly, the world has almost lost sight of real faith. I mean, they talk about faith, so many of them, but there's a difference between living faith and dead faith, as the Apostle James noted in James 1 and 2. Ephesians 2 and verse 8 says that, for by grace are you saved through faith. Through faith, and that not of yourselves, it's the gift of God. I mean, that faith comes from God. You can see that with the fruits of the Spirit in Galatians 5, 22 and 23, I think it is. Faith comes from God, the living faith that we're aiming for here. It's the faith of Christ. You can see that in Galatians 2 and verse 20, if you get the right translation, the King James translation. The modern translations, they play around with words. They like to change the meaning. But you look at the King James over there in Galatians 2 and verse 20, and you see where it's talking about, okay, having a belief in Christ. I mean, that gets things started to some degree, but even there, I mean, John 6, in verse 44 says that God has to make the call. But where do you go after that more simple faith in Christ? Well, as you progress in your spiritual growth and development, as you work toward baptism and the laying on of hands, you're working toward the receipt of God's faith, Christ's faith in you, the living Christ dwelling in you. I could take you through a number of scriptures to just reinforce that point, but I don't have time. It says here in the book, Daniel Unlocks Revelation, when Christ comes back, and that moment is almost here, will he find faith? Is he going to find faith in you? Are you going to have the faith of Daniel the prophet, or the faith of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego? It says here, the answer is that if we are wrapped up in Christ's coming, if we're really anxiously, eagerly awaiting the return of Jesus Christ, if our hope is in that return, then we'll have faith. It says, to the very elect, the name Daniel is filled with meaning. This brings us back to what we emphasized at the very beginning of this study. God is my judge. If God is your judge, then you'll have the faith of Christ. It says, they know, they and all of God's people are being judged by God, and they are thankful for it. We know we're being judged by God. We know our lives, even our very lives, are in God's hands, and he will take care of us. He will deliver us. He will rescue us if we have living faith. That's all we have time for on today's show. Unfortunately, the fastest moving hour in broadcasting. You are listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We thank you for joining us on today's show. We thank many of you for joining us all week, and we'll see you next time.